This is Acast Recommends. Every week we pick one of our favourite shows, and this is one we think you're going to love.
This is the Welsh Rugby Podcast, the show bringing you all the latest on the Six Nations. With expert analysis, special guests and up-to-the-minute news, we'll provide you with everything you need to know about the Six Nations and more. So join us and let's talk some rugby.
Acast is home to the biggest podcasts from the UK and around the world. Subscribe to this show and hundreds more now via Acast or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the 442 podcast. I'm your regular host, Connor Pope, but I'm not really on it today. This is a special episode celebrating two British footballing greats. Neither ever kicked a ball or managed a team, but together they soundtracked the sport for a grateful nation for over 50 years. For the February issue of 442 magazine, we sat down with commentary legends Barry Davis and John Motson to discuss a broadcasting rivalry older than most Premier League coaches. You can read the feature in the magazine and online now, but we wanted to share with you the audio too. The truth is, we only recorded for transcription purposes, so the sound quality is not to its usual high standard. My colleague Chris Flanagan met them in a London hotel bar, so in the background you'll be able to hear the sounds of soft jazz, other customers, and on more than one occasion, an inexplicable retro Nokia ringtone. At one point, John also stops telling a story to order some more wine. It shouldn't really work for podcast, but when we listened to it back, we realised we had something very special, and we just wanted to share it with you. There are some rough cuts in it, where we took out bits that you couldn't really hear anyway, but on the whole, this is just a conversation between Barry Davis and John Motson. Enjoy.
Well, I joined Match of the Day in 1971. Barry was already there, so I guess you've got to say it's over 50.
Yeah.
Is it? Yeah, it must be.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you joined in 69, did you?
I joined in 69.
So how many? That is 50 years
50
ago,
years,
isn't it?
Yeah.
I'll get the decades mixed up.
Yeah. How do you have that problem?
An awful long time is the answer to the question, yeah.
So can you remember? Go on, you're going to ask.
John, I was going to say, do you remember the first time you met?
Well, I remember the first time we had a conversation. I remember it very well. Because Monty, as he said, was the new boy. I hadn't actually got my feet under the table yet, because 69 to 71, it took a bit of time, didn't it, to get into the system. Monty Mates said to me something on the lines of, Trevor, you've got a thought that you want to express, and I was talking about commentary and things,
yeah.
any sort of tips that might help in this working now for the BBC. And I said to him, yeah, I'll give you one tip right away. I said, if they offer you the contract that they've just offered, Ken Wilson, he turned it down. I said, take it straight away before they change their mind. Little did I know he was going to put all of Ken Wolstenholme's records.
No, I do remember that first meeting, actually. We were on a train coming back from West Brom at the old Watney Cup. Barry had commentated and I was there for radio, but he knew I was joining television. And I always remember that one of the most helpful things he said, because I was very nervous about moving from radio, where I was not really very well known, and coming into television where I would have to mix with, I mean, there were some pretty powerful managers around at that time. Barry will tell you that Shankly's and the Revis of this world. And I was very nervous about having to go and meet these people and wondering how they would react to me. And I remember Barry saying, don't worry about that, he said, because television will give you an identity. And he was spot on.
Yeah. And I guess, like, I mean, you were joking about it, there's always a perception that you didn't get on, but obviously, I can see it's obviously not the case and probably never
well,
was.
I was a very understanding fellow, and I was every time.
Yeah, we were sort of placed in a competitive situation by other people, I think it's fair to say.
That's quite true.
It suited the BBC, and Barry may agree or not, it suited the BBC to have two commentators whose styles were, shall we say, distinctively different.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I mean, Jonathan Martin, the head of sport, who had to make the decisions about who did this match and who did that, he once said to me, he said, Barry commentates from the grandstand and you're commentating from the terraces. Well, there were terraces then, of course.
Yeah.
Meaning that my style was a bit crash bang and Barry's was more considered, which I would thoroughly agree with. But yeah, of course, it suited the BBC because Match of the Day then, Barry, was very much a two-match format,
sure,
wasn't it?
Absolutely.
They weren't showing all the goals from everywhere then. We weren't allowed to.
Yeah, yeah.
So on a Saturday, match one or match two, it wouldn't matter which way round it was, Barry would do one and I would do the other. Mm-hmm. This was the occasional return of David Coleman, which happened once or twice.
You're still around, David.
But we did it that way for so long, and I think what suited the BBC was not so much the... Well, not only the contrast in styles, but when it came to the World Cup, and you know, and the BBC were doing England one day and Scotland the next, which in the 70s did happen, they had two frontline men to cover it. So, from their point of view, it worked very well. And we managed not to fall out.
Yes, we did.
I think was a compliment to him, probably.
Well, certainly on the basis of just... that one ground that's fairly important in British football, English football, I should say. Where you had more visits to Wembley than I did, was certainly for a cup. But I mean, I think the BBC used it a bit also for a little bit of in publicity terms.
Yeah.
They tried to sort of set it up. And the press were very good. But we've agreed... since then, but it was actually good for us in terms of the longevity of our careers.
Yes. It was.
Because,
yeah, yeah.
Because you know, with the greatest respect to all those commentating now, they're not going to last as long as we do.
No.
You know, we were very lucky. We were around at the right time.
Well, it occurs to me, I don't know how you feel about this comparison, you sort of the Messi and Ronaldo of commentary, in that you're both around in the same era, and both had the other not been there would have dominated it, kind of brought the best out of you, maybe. I don't know, what do you
may
think
have done. I wouldn't disagree with that. I think where our careers changed slightly, and I'm moving it on very much, Barry always had the gift of being an all-rounder. He didn't just do football. I wouldn't try and enumerate the number of sports you've got. I always remember one of our producers, Fred Viner, was with us one day, and you rattled through all the sports you've covered, and you said to Fred, "In fact, Fred, the only one I haven't done is golf." And Fred Viner, with his ironic sense of humour, said, "Why stop at golf, Barry?" Remember that? I remember that vividly. Because you've done athletics, and in fairness, I'd done a bit of tennis and boxing and radio. But in television terms, Barry did the Olympics, the gymnastics, ice hockey, you name it.
There were people who wrote that the reason I was doing that was because he was getting more of a cake. And that wasn't actually the reason.
Yeah.
I was producers came to me and said, "Would you like to do this? Would you like to do that?"
Yeah.
No, I mean, I never thought I would do the Lord Mayor's show, for example. But the producer came and asked me to do that. I had ambitions to do opening ceremonies at the Olympic Games, to follow David Coleman, which eventually I did.
And John mentioned though about how he kind of saw the kind of difference in styles. How do you kind of view the difference in styles between the two of you?
Yeah, I thought he summed it up reasonably well, possibly slightly to his own detriment. but he does have a different style. Possibly because he came from radio, which I didn't really. I did a little radio when I was in the army, but and used that to get a job.
Yeah.
And was lucky enough that the 1966 World Cup was in England. If it had not been in England, and ITV had not needed to suddenly find four commentators.
Yeah.
And he was, you know, still in short pants, so they couldn't go to him. I wouldn't have had the opportunity.
And what would each be your individual favourite memories of covering England?
Well, I can do that quite easily, because it's something I get asked a lot.
Right,
what was your favourite match?
Yeah.
I would pick England's 5-1 win in Germany, when Sven-Göran Eriksson had become our coach. In the old Olympic Stadium now, because of course they've moved by Munich, the Olympic Stadium in Munich, at a time when England's fortunes weren't soaring exactly, and to go away to Germany, our sort of keenest competitors in many ways in the world because of the World Cup final, and to win 5-1, it was just completely, it came from nowhere for me. Michael Owen's hat-trick and all that business. Ironically, although we won 5-1, we then had a pretty sort of rocky qualification match against Greece at Old Trafford when Beckham scored his free kick, which is another moment that comes back to me very readily. Anyway, to cut a long story short, England and Germany both went to Japan, but but that 5-1 game, I hadn't seen England take a team of Germany's stature apart quite the way they did that night.
And obviously there's the story you tell about Sven afterwards, seeing him in the streets and the commentary line.
Oh yeah, I was throwing at West Ham, didn't I? And he just watched the video. I didn't realise this. I'd said when Owen got his third goal, this is getting better and better and better. And at West Ham, somebody tapped me on the shoulder and this voice said, it's getting better and better and better. And it was Sven. And I always say at dinner, well, I shouldn't say this in a magazine, but I always say when I speak at dinners, I hope it was the football he was talking about.
And Barry, obviously, the hand of God game, what was that? What was that like?
That's one of them. I mean, I didn't chalk up as many as John, but I did have a few really big games, and that was one of them in 86. And I can still see the ball going in the net from Lineker to make it 2-2, but of course it didn't.
Yeah, right at the end.
And I can remember when John Barnes came on.
Yeah.
And I can't remember the name of the right back for Argentina at the time, but Barnes was brought on for John, and I said, everybody in the country was saying, go on, take him on. And I wasn't sure whether that line went down well or not, but it was true.
I think Barry's hit a good point there, because people talk about commentators being unbiased. But if you were commentating on England in a World Cup quarter final, surely you were allowed to show a little bit of patriotism.
But going back, I mean, the best England performance that I have commentated on was England beating Holland in Euro 96.
Right,
And I still think that's the best England performance I've personally seen. But it was recorded. It was on live on ITV.
Okay, yeah.
So as a live match, I would take an England defeat.
Right.
And as I can see Lineker scoring, I can see Gascoigne just getting his toe to the ball, and we would have been in the final, which would have set up John, who was doing the final. Instead of that, he had an absolute rubbish final. but the atmosphere in that semi-final was just the best I've ever known.
Right.
And I also liked the way that television presented it at the beginning. And Des came over to me, Desmond Island, obviously, very early. And I didn't say very much, and I just let the music of the crowd, football's coming home, which has never been beaten. That's the best song.
Yeah.
It keeps getting repeated. Because it was
actually, Barry's just touched on another of his great strengths there. He had, because he had I think it was remarkable, because I found it so hard not to talk, but I thought he had a real gift for choosing his words carefully and knowing when not to talk, which of course is one of the things commentators should learn.
Yeah.
But he could do that naturally. And I mean, that night you did, and wow, it was. And I did a couple of games in Euro get the date right, John. 96. And I sensed the same thing, probably not so extreme as that semi-final night, but I sensed the same thing. The country kind of grasped that tournament, Barry, didn't it?
It did. And I think probably one of the best goals you've commentated on helped set that up, i.e. Gazza against Scotland.
Well, I was doing a poor programme this afternoon talking about England, as you have to after an international. And I just made the point. I said, I don't think, again, you may or may not agree, I said, I don't think Gareth Southgate has been able to pick a midfield player who can do what Gazza did.
Yeah.
You know, collect the ball on the turn, beat people, play the penetrating pass that creates an opportunity, score a goal. I mean, Gazza was the complete midfielder in a international. Yeah. We haven't got anybody like that now. Whatever you talk about formations, whether he plays three at the back or four, where is the creative player in midfield?
Yeah.
Or where is your Platini? Or where, you can make as many as you like.
Yeah.
But we haven't got anybody who can really dominate a game and open up the defence, but that moment of, he's right, that moment of Gazza. You see, look where he was nearly on the goal line. That's where Gazza used to get to, rather than sitting on the halfway line.
And what was he like to commentate on a great moment like that? That...
Well, go on.
It's, it's you were talking about your life.
No, no, but you did the Gazza one.
You don't really think about
no.
it. I mean, in a way, it goes against what John has said for me, because I've always say to people, I open my mouth and hope that my foot is sufficiently far away. I've not been a good. I prepare for the match. I do my homework.
Yeah.
But I don't even like to prepare the opening of the match, because sometimes, I mean, I've been to a few games, particularly abroad. When the opening bears no relation to the pictures, and I hate that.
Right.
I mean, it's become commonplace now, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think both of us. I mean, this man will remain nameless, but there was a commentator. Well, there is a commentator who used to write before the match even started. Used to write down the three things, one of which he would say at the end, depending on the result.
Okay.
I could never do that, and it has to be spontaneous. Why does it feel to commentate on it? You're right. It has to, not only does it have to be spontaneous, it has to be coming from here. It's your reaction to a great moment.
From here,
it's a great moment. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think I can think of moments that Barry captured brilliantly. I can remember one or two that I thought, well, that didn't sound too bad. But you were very much on your own in that. Well, you are as a commentator anyway. Mm. But you were very much on your own in that moment.
Mm.
Because you were the only one who could actually spread that word to however many million viewers there were.
So when you said...
We used to compare notes from time to time. A number of times, back in the studio, on a recorded match, or even on a live match, when the experts in the studio referred to something, which either he or I, whichever one of us was commentating, had brought up and said, this is an important point.
Yeah.
It's just so we'd never said a bloody
thing. Yes, right. I always used to find that frustrating. Yeah. But, he's right, though. We were both sort of coming from a different perspective. But, I think the rhythm Barry's commentary was a great strength, because I'll just tell this little story.
Yeah.
About 2 years ago, and I don't know why it was, but you will tell me. They brought you back to do a commentary.
Oh, yes.
Didn't they?
50th anniversary of the...
50th anniversary of what? Match of the Day?
Match of the Day.
And Barry, bravely, I thought, having not done football for a few seasons... Well,
I'm being kind. I'm not sure.
Well, I'll tell you why I'm going to be kind, because however many years it was... Barry rang me, actually, because I'd done one of the teams quite recently.
Right,
I think it was Swansea or somebody like that.
No. Crystal Palace against West Ham.
Crystal Palace, West Ham. I must have done.
I've
done Palace before, and I marked Barry's card as best I could, knowing the kind of things commentators like to know. Tell you what, his performance was absolutely immaculate. I thought to myself, crikey, you know, he could still be doing it here. And I would say probably still now. But, you know, the rhythm he used to get into, just enough words when it was necessary, and as I said at the very beginning, brilliant identification. He didn't put a foot wrong when he did this one, when it was 2-3 years ago now. It comes back to what we said at the beginning. I think we, in a positive way, we pushed each other on a little bit.
Yes,
that's all I'd say.
I agree with that.
I do know for a fact that a couple of the younger commentators. Yes. Got very nervous when they heard Barry was that was a compliment to him.
Yeah.
I'll say nervous, I mean that he did it and that was that. Very good.
But just as an answer to what John said, I walked round from the tunnel to the commentary position.
Bit of a hike.
The crowd were very, very generous to me. And I got up onto the gantry, and as I'm walking to the commentary seat, there's a camera walking backwards.
Oh, right.
And I'm thinking, you know, I'm really rather enjoying this. And I suddenly thought, that's all right now. But if I make a mistake in the first 5 minutes, maybe so. He never was any good anyway.
Do you know what? It's funny because I did my last match at Crystal Palace at the end of my last BBC season. I did Crystal Palace against West Brom. And the same thing happened to me in that sort of hike round the pitch and climbing up the ladder. The crowd were applauding, and I thought, oh my God, this is all very well, but I just thought that if on my last day I get the wrong goal scorer, 1-0 win, how am I going to feel then? Well, fortunately, the goals are quite straightforward, but we have that in common, Crystal Palace. Yeah.
At least you've been doing it regularly. I quit, and that's what happened. In September. I quit Match of the Day in 2004 and this programme went out in 2016.
Well, it was 12 years, was it?
Oh, yeah. It was a long, long time. Right. I mean, I'd seen a few football matches, but there's nothing the same as, a microphone in your hand and people to identify and things like that. Yeah. And I did wonder. I didn't know how many bloody substitutes there were. And the pace of the game was much faster.
Yes, it is. It's quicker. Yeah. And also, of course, Barry and I had to contend with just one substitute when we started.
Right, yeah.
Numbers 1 to 12.
Yeah.
Now you've got 7 subs, which means you've got 14 more players to do research on, think about it.
Yeah.
And numbers that vary from 24 to 65. I mean, it is ludicrous, really, the numbering system now.
Hello, I'm Max Rushton, and this is Football Weekly. We cover the football, all the football, from the serious...
It was the most cowardly, disgusting press conference I've ever seen.
...to the analysis...
When you put them into the actual games, Liverpool are getting more points against XG than Leicester.
...to the nonsense.
And I will be having £5 on him to be called a boot winner.
What? Christian Benteke?
Listen to Football Weekly from The Guardian on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The 2 Minutes of Zen podcast, brought to you by Zendium Toothpaste, gives you quick and simple wellness hacks you can do while brushing your teeth. From a strengthening squat workout to a calming mindfulness practice. Because at Zendium, we believe in daily routines that work to improve the health of your body, mind and mouth. Listen to 2 Minutes of Zen podcast on Spotify. Zendium, natural protection, clinically proven.
If you're enjoying this episode, you'll love the Euro 96 special issue of 442 magazine, which is on sale in shops and online now. In it, we've got a long read on the tournament, a diary of every single match day, reports on all the England games, interviews with players including Paul Ince, Teddy Sheringham, Darren Anderton and Carol Poborski, profiles of Paul Gascoigne and Gareth Southgate, and the full story behind Badil and Skinner's fantasy football. You can subscribe to the magazine for £12.25 every 3 months, getting issues delivered to your door for less than £4 each. That's over 100 pages of brilliant football journalism 13 times a year, including Euro 2020 and new season previews. Head to myfavouritemagazines.co.uk/FFTpod20 to subscribe now. You can also find that link in the show notes for this episode below.
The other thing that we had to do, which people don't realise, I mean, DVR and all that. DVR, is that the right? No, it's not.
VAR?
VAR.
Okay.
I don't get it, and I'm not going to get involved in it.
No, well.
And I don't want you to.
We won't.
But we, when the slow motion first came he and I never saw the slow motion.
Oh, right.
But we had to recount the goal or the incident as we had seen it
tricky.
At the time. And then they laid the sound on the goal or incident.
Right. Yeah.
And we could be totally wrong.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, our record, living good.
Well, I have to say, I used to sweat all Saturday evening thinking, will my words over that goal be sort of justified by the pictures, and it was a great relief when you watched the programme, and because in those days there wasn't the capacity to edit like there is now. I mean, we were really stuck with what we said at the time. And then they laid the pictures in, of course, and the reason, Barry's quite right, the reason that happened was because the only machine that the BBC could use to do what we call the action replay,
yeah,
was being used on racing,
oh, okay,
which of course was live on Grandstand.
Yeah.
So they couldn't send the machine to where Barry
right,
and I
yeah,
were,
yeah,
so we had to do it ourselves.
Yeah,
and you mentioned about commentating on the Germany semi-final in Euro 96. What do you remember about commentating on the shootout, obviously with Southgate? And your words were iconic, even if it was not...
Well, the words were because I didn't say very much.
Well, yeah.
If I had... truthfully, I could say now, and I know one commentator did, but he would look very stupid if he was wrong. I won't give you his name. But as Gareth ran up, I was not comfortable with the run-up.
Mm.
And if you'd have said to me, you know, is he going to score? I felt that he wasn't. But my reaction was just what everybody sitting at home would have said, probably with a few adjectives added to, oh no.
Yeah, that was exactly what you said.
Yeah.
It was perfect.
Yeah, and it was obviously you kept a silence after that as well, which
yeah,
was
well,
okay.
And then
he was the nation.
Terry came on, Terry Van Vos came
yeah,
on and put
right.
his arm around there,
yeah.
And then I said a few things. I mean, you could argue in some respect, looking back on it, it's a terrible moment for him, terrible moment for England, but as I believe he said, it could not get worse than that. Mm. And my friends, for his sake, it never does.
Yeah.
But he understands. I mean, I think he's done an extremely
yeah.
good job,
yeah, yeah.
but John is right what he said at the start. I think we're getting a bit carried away sometimes. And, no, I won't get into you or me into the area. There's quite a lot of talk that night about when they lost, about the formation of the side and how this was changing. I was never, you know, I believed in total football. So basically, I mean, the Dutch, everybody talked about total football. I mean, everybody was in an attacking position when they had the ball,
yeah.
and everybody was in the defensive
yeah.
position when they didn't have the, and that's all I want from my team. And whether it's three or five or, you know.
Yeah, well, I must say, I go along entirely with that.
Yeah.
Roy Hodgson and I were talking a little while ago, and he said to me, you know, all this talk about formations, he said, it's all overplayed.
Mm.
He said, if you froze the game at any one time, it isn't necessarily so that the players are 4-3-3,
yeah. yeah, yeah.
that one of them could have made a run back.
Yeah.
And I think he's right. We've reached the point now where the press can't seem to lay off the fact, oh, is Gareth playing a 5-3-2 or
yeah.
is he playing a 4-3-3? Well, at different points in the game, he may do either.
Yeah.
I think it's been overplayed. Yeah. I do really.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And if, you know...
I think we should make a comeback.
Don't speak too loud.
There'll be a lot of support for that.
Oh, that's good. It's a very generous
situation.
It was a joke. Though.
Yeah, no.
A good one, though.
Yeah. So if, obviously England have got a long way to go to win the Euros, but if Gareth Southgate could win the Euros at Wembley, as someone who commentated on his loan, would you be pleased for him, I guess?
Oh,
yeah.
I'd be delighted
yeah.
for him. And
yeah.
I think it has been a major part in his attitude.
Yeah.
He knows how people feel at
yeah.
their worst moment.
Yeah.
I think, well, you agree, John, I think there are a lot of talented players
yes.
around.
Yeah,
there's
yeah.
a lot of them.
Yeah.
And one or two of them that actually haven't been near getting into the England squad yet.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a young guy at Aston Villa.
Grealish. Yeah.
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 He's not as young as he used to be, but maybe he's a better player for that.
I also think on that note, talking about our early days, of course, England didn't have that pathway. You know, St.
Yeah.
George's Park was sort of a dream in the sky somewhere.
Yeah.
And the continuity that Gareth brings, because he's been with the under-21s and he's seen the development of these kids who, from now, with winning things at under-17. Now, I know that doesn't mean you're going to be a great player at 24, but nevertheless, I think he has... One of his legacies will be that he has developed a pathway where the boys who come through from the junior teams have got some idea of what international football is all about.
Yeah.
We certainly never had that, did we?
No.
I mean, the under-21s were like the only thing we had, and they were completely cut off quite often, weren't they?
Yeah, but you could argue we finally followed the German system, because the Germans always knew who was going to follow up.
They knew who the next manager was.
Oh, yeah, that's what I mean. And we didn't. When you think about the people who've been appointed,
Can I ask you for your own favourite commentary line and the favourite commentary line of the other? Is that, I know it's tricky. You can choose two or three if you want.
Oh, goodness me! I'm not sure.
Well, I say, if there's not just one, then
I can't even think of any.
Oh, really?
At this precise moment. It was there at the time.
Well, I've got some ideas. Well, I mean, for me, like the Darlene, Brolin, Darlene, you're an actor, and things like that.
It was almost a poetic sequence.
Yeah.
In a match where. Dear Graham Taylor, who I liked very much as a man. How you bring off Gary Lineker and put on the man with whom he's played at Leicester City.
Alan Smith.
But we were well beaten that day.
Yeah.
Mark you, at the same tournament. Michel Platini, who was a great player, his managing the French side. I met that draw. You didn't get that one, did you? Or did you get that one? Nil-nil. Paul and Bruce Clark. Would you have said? Sorry, this
is okay. No, it's all right.
Would you have been prepared to say this is the most boring European Cup final of all time?
I'm not sure I'd have said that, but I think I would have found a way of saying it without...
I don't remember
very well. The only one I remember with Platini was
when... The winners were awful.
I did the one when Platini took them all on in 84, scored the amazing last-minute goal. Teagana thing, which people often remind me of. Barry's... second Maradona goal, you have to say that's brilliant. That's all that needed to be said. And people often quote that to me. And also your other one, with a sense of a little bit of amusement, Francis Lee. Look at his face. It was so, but it was right in a way, because he was screaming Franny Lee. It was really good.
He left Manchester City under a bit of a cloud, and to come back, and he obviously wasn't very pleased that he left initially, to come back, and just looking at his face at that moment.
That's true.
That's what I said. I opened my mouth, and sometimes I won, sometimes I lost.
Any favourite of your own?
His description of the winning goal in the European of 84.
It was France, Portugal, and France had trailed 2-1.
Yes.
Tigana took over, really, and laid on this goal for Platini. I mean, I was screaming then. That was as near as I got to losing control.
Yeah.
And when I came back, you'd be amazed at this. We had a producer in the BBC, and he came up to me and said, "John, well done in Europe." He said, "But there are two very opposing views about the way you dealt with the winning goal for France." As if half the department thought I'd scream my head off and it was horrible, and the other half thought it was memorable. So it does it. It's his old-fashioned. You can't please all the people all the time.
That's right.
And
it's probably true about you and me. That remark.
Yeah.
And did you ever think sometimes where, I mean, you talked about at the start about I guess when you commentate for the BBC, do people accuse you of bias, no matter what you say sometimes?
Oh, yeah. When a commentator opens his mouth and says something nice about Team A, Team B think he's against them.
Imagine.
They're fans. That's a fact.
It was very true. It happened to me a lot over the early 80s when Tottenham got to two cup finals. And I don't mind admitting, Keith Birkinshaw, the manager, was one of those who was very cooperative, and I got a lot of kind of support from the club in the way when you do the cup final, you get a lot of background and training sessions. And a lot of people used to come up to me, not so much now, and say, oh, we all know you're a Tottenham fan, but I've had other people come up to me and say, oh, you're a gooner, aren't you? You know, so you,
what?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. And oh, why are commentators always biased in favour of Manchester United? I've had all that.
Yeah.
Had all that. And the irony of it is, and this is something I've not been accused of, but I can admit it now, the team I saw most of in my days with my dad, if you want to call it that, was Chelsea.
Okay, yeah.
But once I started commentating, any affection I had there just disappeared with all the other neutral things you've got to observe.
Yeah.
I was a supporter of Spurs as a kid, but I went to great lengths.
Yeah.
If I turn up to a ground, I wouldn't wear a shirt or a tie
And
I don't think people could have pinned that.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, we all knew Tony Gabba, bless him.
With a Man United man.
Right.
Yes, and Alan Parry Liverpool.
Yeah, exactly. We knew that.
Have you got like a line that you sometimes see back on television you cringe about? I don't know, anything like that.
Ooh, few of those. I know, sometimes you come off, I mean, maybe it's a silly way for me, but two things I want to say about this. Charlie George, when he scored in the cup final for Arsenal, I wanted Kenneth Wolstenholme, who was the commentator, just to say, "By George!" Because that's what people used as an expression when they were surprised at something or brilliant something. And he scored for Derby County against Real Madrid at the baseball ground. And as soon as the goal had gone in, I laughed off. You had your chance and you missed it.
Well, I've had that feeling. I mean, I remember when Van Basten scored that great goal in the 88 European Championships, that volley.
Yeah.
And I don't know what I did say, but I wish I'd said that goal wasn't made in Holland, it was made in heaven.
Right, yeah.
But I never got round to saying it. And Barry's point about spontaneity, it's completely borne out, because you don't really know what you're going to say.
No, yeah.
I mean, that thing, the one that I sometimes people chuckle about and sometimes they remind me of, was when Wimbledon won the cup and I said the crazy gang have beaten
that's
the culture.
I should remember that.
And that was not written down or even thought about.
Yeah.
But of course, everybody knew that Wimbledon caught the crazy gang and they beat Liverpool. So it just fitted at the time.
Yeah.
But I didn't go to Wembley thing. And other thing is, you mentioned Ken Wolstenholme there, Barry. Ken Wolstenholme, when he set out for the 1966 World Cup final, couldn't possibly have thought, I'm going to say they think it's all over, it is now, because he would never have known there were people on the pitch.
But that was total simplicity.
Yeah.
You know, he sees there are people on the pitch. So he says, some people are on the pitch. Statement of fact.
Yes.
And he's thinking, why are they on the pitch? And he's thinking, they must think it's all over.
Yeah.
And Hurst Bank, his great line was to say, it is now.
That's what made it.
Yeah.
But as Barry says, combining an incident that he could never conceive that people would be on the pitch with England winning. I mean, I don't think any of us will beat that, actually.
I've seen a few come and go in the length of my career, including John. I don't know if I said it to John. And I said, but don't think you're ever going to get the top line, because it's already been said.
You won't deliver it. Yeah, that's right. Well
but,
done.
But words, I mean, you mentioned the 86. I made a complete mess of the handball.
Oh, really?
I didn't see it at the time. It wasn't a great view. It was high up and so on and so on. And I recapped it over slow motion replays that were actually put in London. Not, I wasn't seeing them.
Right.
In front of
them. Yeah.
You know, they were saying, and Chilton's going up now, and but the important thing, some people sometimes say that I said that was sheer football genius.
Yeah.
I did not. I said that was pure football genius. And the choice of that word, which I didn't think about at the time, was important because that was pure. That was cheating.
Yeah.
What had gone on.
Yeah, but I don't. I think you're playing yourself down, saying that you made a mess of it, because a lot of people watch, and I was watching live in Guadalajara. A lot of people watching that for the first time wouldn't have thought that was handball.
Yeah.
I must tell you,
the only clue, and you got it on the replay, was when England ran back to the centre. Yeah. One or two England players were doing, and you got that on the replay.
And the replay years later. Dear Lee Dixon, it was the programme they put out on Match of the Day when I left.
Okay, yeah.
And they played that, and he said, yeah, I don't know where it was, but this goal was played up. Lee Dixon said, everybody knew what had happened except the commentator. I thought, well, you know, 20 years on, that's probably right.
Hello, I'm Max Rushton, and this is Football Weekly. We cover the football, all the football, from the serious...
It was the most cowardly, disgusting press conference I've ever seen.
...to the analysis...
When you put them into the actual games, Liverpool are getting more points against their XG than Leicester.
...to the nonsense.
And I will be having £5 on him to be called a boot winner.
What? Christian Benteke?
Listen to Football Weekly from The Guardian on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Obviously, he did the 94 World Cup final. How gutting was it that it obviously didn't turn out to be such a great spectacle?
It was hard work.
I just want to show we'd had this nip and tuck thing all through the years. I want another one. Yes. Thank you. Barry, you came in right on cue. As usual.
Hey, I'm enjoying this. You know,
I'm having a great time. We were there, and the time had come, and I've been perfectly honest about this. It probably was a bit premature when I did my first cup final, and in all honesty, looking back now, I think Barry probably I think Barry should have had it. Anyway, life went on, and then the World Cup became an issue, and I had a pretty poor World Cup in 1990 in Italy, not up to my normal standard.
I think it probably was the
whatever we had before.
Yeah.
And then in the head of football, Brian Barwick at the time, had to make a difficult decision in 1990, and he stuck with me, rightly or wrongly. And then when we got to 94, I sensed that the time had come, and Barry was in good form. I hadn't been in great form, and I remember the day I got a telephone call, and believe it or not, I was in a bar with Terry Venables, and I got this call from a man called Malcolm Kemp. Oh no, he took the call and then handed the thing to me.
Yeah.
And then Brian Barwick said, look, you may or may not be surprised at this, but we're giving the final to Barry. And I went, yeah, well done, Barry. And I phoned him straight away in the office. And I was genuinely disappointed. Not that my 1990 final was not, but it was dreadful. It was dreadful. And you got one which was nearly as bad.
No, I agree with you. I'll accept you had the worst.
But no.
But you bloody deserved it because of all the others.
Well, yes, I think that's right, bloody hell. And you know, I'm proud of this thing, really, because I honestly think that the way it worked out, and as Barry said, it was in the BBC's advantage and interest from where they were sitting. I'm pretty certain that I got more out of myself, because I knew that the competition was there all the time.
Yeah.
Really. And I also knew that, because of the style thing we've been debating, that a lot of people, even when I was doing cup finals, used to say to me, but I tell you what, I really like Barry Davis.
Right.
Now, I wonder now, and I'm going to be a bit controversial here, how many people walk around the street discussing the current BBC commentators, of which there are about 10, by the way. So yeah. You could say, because it's 10 games now, there were only two of them.
Yeah.
You could say Barry and I were lucky because we were the only two on the BBC.
Right.
The late Brian Moore, of course, was very prominent on ITA, and we would both say what a first-class pro he was.
Yeah. And a good pro.
And Jerry Sinistad, of course.
Yes.
Yeah. But I just think it's so nice to look back all those years later and not feel any, I hope you don't, not feel any sort of resentment about what happened, because it was just part of life. And I... Sorry.
I just thought that wouldn't...
I didn't expect you to tell me. I'm actually, and I hope he is, I'm really pleased to be able to sit next to him today and share such a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Because some people, I would never bear a grudge if I can help it, and he certainly doesn't.
No.
And I keep saying this, but don't forget, of course, Barry then had I wouldn't say a second career, that would be stupid, but he extended his career into a number of years at Wimbledon, the Olympics, as he's already talked about, and the athletics. And the thing about Barry is, sometimes the commentator should be spelt with a small c, and the broadcaster should be spelt with a capital B.
Right, yeah.
Capital B.
Right.
At all times.
Yeah. What's it like to both be regarded as national treasures? You are. You definitely both are.
I mean, Johnson's a slightly hit on that. I'm not sure about the expression, although people, I'm sure, say that to you, and they say it to me. But I just think that the fact that we have the opportunity together, and I never felt, I mean, obviously I was disappointed when he got to it. When people go back to the archives, they'll find that I actually resigned on the first one.
Right.
And that was nothing to do with John.
Okay.
That was
I was promised something by
the boss at the time.
He was.
And then he made a totally different decision than the first time I heard about it was in the newspaper.
Right.
So
which game was that again?
Man United.
Yes, 77. Yeah.
But that only came about by chance, because David Coleman, who really at that stage was the Cup Final commentator, disappeared, didn't he?
Mysteriously. I mean, he did it's one of the great mysteries. But it also says much for a question of sport.
Yes.
Because I once asked him, he did the 1978 final in Argentina. You'd done it.
Well, I could have a story.
You'd have done that. And then he never did another football match for the BBC.
Okay.
I once asked him, and he said, well, you know, I was really enjoying getting into question of sport, which he was very keen on.
Yeah.
And he went back into the studio and did some grandstands.
Yes, he did. Dare I say this, I think he was a great commentator, but he was a much greater athletics commentator.
Curiously, when Coleman did his last World Cup final in 78, which was the year after what we've been talking about, Alan Hart was the head of sport, and I remember being taken on one side in Buenos Aires. You'd already gone back to do Wimbledon, I think, or anyway. And Alan Hart sat me down, and it came as a complete surprise to me when he said, "I just thought I would tell you that David's doing the final." As if I was in contention for it,
right?
Which I'd never at that point thought about.
Right. Okay.
To be perfectly honest. Although obviously my chance came later. So all this was going on at a time when, God, well, we don't want to get too heavily into how television's changed.
Yeah.
But of course, times you're talking about with us, there was no Sky.
Yeah.
It was BBC versus ITV.
Yeah, true.
Whether it was the FA Cup final, the World Cup, I mean that. It was hostile too.
Or even a football match between the two, which our boss said, "You will not play that game." Remember that?
He
refused to let BBC play against an ITV.
Oh, right, really? Oh, right, okay.
I always remember my first World Cup was 74. Barry was there, obviously.
Yeah.
Coleman was there. And we happened to be staying in a hotel in Frankfurt that some bright spark at the BBC decided was the ideal. And it was the same hotel as ITV were in.
Right.
And the hostility between the two was now, I remember Sam Leach, our boss at the time, saying to me, you will not go into the bar if ITV are there. And even if it's Alf Ramsey, he was working for ITV that year, he said, even if it's Alf Ramsey, you won't buy him a drink. Even if it's Alf Ramsey, you won't buy him a drink. And I didn't know Alf that well.
No,
but we knew still, who each other were because of the Ipswich thing, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, that was how it was then.
Yeah.
Now, of course, you know, it's changed. In those days, none of us would ever be allowed to work for ITV or the opposition.
Yeah.
And now there are people working for BBC, ITV, yeah. BT. There's no barriers
yeah.
there.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a big way in which television has changed.
Yes.
We had a label round our neck, if you see
what
saying, BBC.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. And do people stop you on the street, just general members of the public, and recite?
Oh, I fight them off in there when I saw Barry.
Really?
But they're the people you're talking to, aren't they?
Aren't they just?
I've always been prepared to accept. They're not bumping into, I don't know, Michael Parkinson or somebody from Today or Terry Wogan. But do people do some
and
stuff?
Certainly in my case, yeah. my voice gives me away more than my face.
So.
For obvious reasons. Yeah. Thank you.
You should
have taken a picture of that. That's very good, that, actually. But I'll tell you a story.
Yeah,
people
yeah.
get mixed up with commentators against myself. Occasionally, you'll get a call from somebody who's making a video or writing a book. And a fella rang me up from Manchester City. This was before the Guardiola era, obviously. And he said, I'm so glad I've got hold of you. So I want you to talk me through that commentary you did when Georgie Kincladsey scored that amazing goal at Main Road. And I said, yeah. And he said, well, you must remember how he went jink through three or four. And City were on a downer at the time. He lifted the ball. And I let him go. And then I said, excuse me. I said, I don't think you'll find I did that game. Oh, yes, you did, he went. And I said, look, excuse me again, but I do remember the goals. I said, I think you'll find the commentator that day was Barry Davis. Of course it was.
And do people, when they talk to you, do they express a preference between the two of you?
Not now.
No.
I think they see us as part of a, I'm using big italics, golden age.
Yes.
When televised football was still quite new.
Yeah.
Because when Barry did his first World, and I don't know the answer to this, but you'll tell me, I would imagine your first World Cup match was in black and white, wasn't it? 66.
66, it was.
Had to be.
It was, yeah.
Because the first major sports event in colour in this country was the Mexico Olympics, and that was 68.
Yeah, yeah.
So when I joined in 71, colour television had only been in 3 years,
yeah.
and even, you know, when he joined, it wasn't at all.
The first match of the day was at Liverpool, wasn't it?
Yes, Ken did that, didn't he?
Ken did that.
Yeah. No, I mean, don't think that was in colour the day Ken started match of the day, was it?
No, nobody started.
The first colour match.
Yeah,
you're right. Yeah, you're right. First one was at Anfield, because I remember them saying match of the day started at Anfield, and it's starting colour in it. Yeah, you're right. Yeah,
We should raise a glass to him, actually, to Ken and to David, because they did move out of the way and give us a chance, didn't they?
Put that camera on. Picture
of it
been a few years.
Yeah, might still be.
And Barry, obviously, John had the sheepskin coat, was it? Did you ever consider having a signature garment? Or?
Help me with that.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, people kept on about a sheepskin coat.
Yeah.
And do you remember there was I think some magazine or other, and I actually told them, I said, I wore a sheepskin coat before he did.
And
I said to him, I was a bit unkind, I said, and they've now gone out of style.
Well, in fairness,
but he was getting a good deal out of it.
You won't mind me saying this, I think you and Brian Moore both had what I would call sheepskin jackets. Mine went down to my ankle. And I'd been in Match of the Day 20 years before anybody made a big issue of it.
Right.
And it happened on a cup tie day at Wickham, when the BBC were due to do a second round match. This is December 1990, how can I forget this? They were due to play Peterborough, and the snow came down, very localised storm in the Do you call Wickham the Thames Valley? I don't think you do, do you? Whatever valley it is.
Chilterns.
And it absolutely covered the pitch. The referee called the game off. And I was standing there about to do a grandstand preview with Martin O'Neill, who hadn't actually come out at that point. And they said, oh, forget that, the game's off. Can you just explain to the viewers why we won? So I stood in the freezing cold with a silly old cap on and my sheepskin, and I'd had a minute and a half to camera to say, well, this has come as a complete shock. A localised storm here has ruled out Wickham's... Did my piece. Now, when they show it again on television, and obviously I was in vision and all the rest of it, people think that's what made the sheepskin a trademark. But there was a guy there that day, always remember his name, Stuart Clark, and he was doing a series of what he called unusual scenes at football grounds.
Right.
He made it into a postcard and into a book.
Yeah.
And he made it a life's work, really. And he had people going to the toilet, not going to the toilet as such, walking in the toilet, and he had people buying tickets off... It was anything that wasn't... You know, and he decided that me in the sheepskin coat in the snow would make one of his postcards.
Right, OK.
And I think that did more for me than anything else.
OK. Yeah, yeah. And
I started, wasn't it? You did look...
I look like the abominable snowman.
And just, I forgot to ask you about the 96 semi-final on Germany. The Germany goal scorer, you'd have to be very careful with how you said that name.
Yeah, well, there were one or two German names a bit like that. Yeah.
And just finally, I'll let you go in a minute.
I'm enjoying it.
Brian Clough, I think, what was it like both you to deal with him? I guess, I know he kissed you in his last game, and
he kissed Barry.
He was a real character.
Yeah.
Captivating, I would say.
Yeah.
And we both had several interviews. Oh, and I'll tell you one that I'll rip. Just tell you this one. The last time I interviewed Cloughy was in the stand at Nottingham Forest, and by now... Careful what I say, because I know Nigel.
Yeah.
But by now, he, unfortunately, you know. Anyway, we were sitting there in the stand, and he was being provocative as usual, and I'd sacked the whole of the FA and all this business. And I remember saying, Brian, you're quite late in the tooth now as a manager, so to speak. I said, have you got any real ambition? This was difficult, because Forest were going to go down. I said, have you got any ambitions left as a manager? He said, yes, I have. I want to last longer than you and Barry Davis.
I remember that.
Do you remember that line? He threw me completely. Well, he didn't, sadly. Oh, he actually did say that. I want to last longer than you and Barry Davis.
That's possibly the best compliment we've
ever paid. Yeah, oh, blimey.
It must have been special to be around such, you know, icons of football
baseball ground in those days when he was there. The place lit up.
Hmm.
I said to him, Ryan, if I could play to the standard required, I said, I'll play for you for one of two reasons. One, because you were a great coach and helping me.
Yeah.
Two, to prove you wrong when you left me out of the team.
Yeah.
I said, your stick and carrot.
Yeah, it was great.
And he said, isn't that the only way you can manage? And it was.
Right, yeah, yeah.
But he managed to do that. He was, I mean, it would have been fascinating if he'd have got the English job, but no one at the FA was ever going to
know. Yeah.
And then that's the English attitude.
Yeah.
And you could quote a few other.
No,
and if you talk to other managers and things, they used to say, oh, it's all kind of motivation. He doesn't do any coaching at Derby. They don't do any coaching. They just go for walks by the Trent. So one day I was researching a book at the time, not BBC interview. It's a European Cup book. And I said to Brian, how do you respond to the accusation that you don't do any coaching? Peter Taylor was sitting there, well, he was a bit embarrassed. And Cluffy said, John, I coach every time I open my mouth.
Actually true.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
That was
actually
a point.
True.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you talked about the England Greece game and the Beckham free kick. I read an interview. Is it right that you were running down the aisle or something? Is that right? Or
in denial?
No. Running. You were down the aisle or something like that.
Oh no! The gantry went.
Oh yeah, yeah.
The only time I saw Trevor Brooking lose his cool.
Oh, it's Trevor Brooking. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. It was 2-1 to Greece.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were in trouble.
Yeah, I was
Germans
at the game.
The Germans were playing
simultaneous.
And he'd had three goes, Beckham, that day.
Yeah.
And then when it went in the net, everybody. I don't know how to put it. That not only did the ground erupt, the gantry erupted. Trevor broke a cable somewhere, and I knocked a microphone off the desk. And oh, that was another priceless moment.
Yeah.
He's had a few priceless moments. I mean. Who was and who wasn't in the Brazilian team?
What was that like to do?
I lost it a bit there because Ryan kept coming back to me, you see, to see who'd got which team sheet, and I was gasping by this stage, and I said, "And Trevor Brookings with? Well, of course he's with me. You see him right there, you know."
You didn't let him in for half an hour.
Thanks to Barry Davis, John Watson and Chris Flanagan for today's episode. Don't forget that you can read that feature on 442.com and in the Euro 96 special issue of the magazine on sale now. You can also subscribe to the magazine for less than £4 an issue by going to myfavouritemagazines.co.uk/FFTpod20. The music you heard is by Hal Griff, which, like this podcast, is available on iTunes and Spotify. Thanks for listening.